Also, we'll get started. We're here on the top of Daf Lamed Omid Aleph, and we began the sugya of Mitzvah Haba Bavir. This is a world class Shas sugya, and we'll try to see what we can do with it. Yesterday, we made a big deal about the word Shenemar, if you recall that, because Shenemar seems to indicate that we're dealing with a Doraisa Halacha. This is one of the major issues that comes up over and over again, whether mitzvah baba vera is a psul d'oraisa or it's only a psul d'rabbanan. The reason why one could theoretically argue that we're dealing with only d'rabbanan is because this pasuk is in Tanakh. It's a pasuk in Malachi. It's not a pasuk in Chumash. And usually the rule of thumb is that which is derived from Tanakh doesn't have the status of a d'oraisa. It only has the status of what's called divrei kabbalah, which is somewhere between, in the no man's land, the gray area between a Doraisa and a Darabonu. But nevertheless, Tosfos seems to assume over and over again that the psul of Mitzvah Baba Avera is Doraisa. Okay, let's look at this pasuk in Malachi. Now, the funny thing about it is that in the text that we have in front of us, the Gemara quotes only the first half of the pasuk. And the punchline is in the second half of the pasuk. That's what's funny about this. So I don't know if in your Gemaras you may have something on the right side that's called Torah or Hasholem. I don't know if you have such a thing. You know, it depends on which edition of the Shas you have. But if you have that, keep your finger, one finger on the Gemara and one finger on the Torah or Hasholem. Because the Torah or Hasholem is going to quote the entire verse, and that's what we need. We need the last part of the verse. Now, what's going on in this context, and this is true for much of Tanakh, is that the Navi is giving starke Musar, as we'd say, very harsh rebuke, and he's accusing the people of vahevesem gozel. Now, the word vahevesem is a reference to a carbon that's being brought to the Beis Hamikdash. And the Navi is saying, look at you people, look at your paradoxical behavior, which is antithetical to morality. It's very nice that you want to bring a karmon. You know, we know that the Nevi'im were opposed to just bringing karbonis as a mechanical act. Here, not only did you bring the karmon as a mechanical act, but you stole the animal, and then you amakdish it, you sanctified it, so to speak, and you brought it as a karmon. And the Navi goes ahead and says that that's despicable. And how does he illustrate the repulsive nature of taking a stolen animal and bringing it as a korban? By combining it with the es ha-piseach. Now the word piseach in Lashon Kodesh means an incomplete animal, meaning it's missing one of its limbs. It might be missing an arm, it might be missing a leg, whatever it is, it's an incomplete animal. That's called a carbon that's a balmum. And a carbon that's a balmum, which has a blemish to it, and in this case it's missing a member of its body, that carbon is completely excluded from, bless you, from the mizbeach. And the pasuk goes on to say, v'esachole, you bring an animal that's ill. We'll soon see in a minute the difference between piseach and a chole in a second. But now take a look in the Torah R, and you'll see that at the end of this pasuk, it says, Ha'eretze osa miyedchem, Omar Hashem. That's what you should really be underlining if you happen to have that, because that's missing in the text of our Gemara, and that's the punchline. Ha'eretze, which literally translates as, does it fulfill my will, with a capital W. Ha'eretze, it's a rhetorical question. He's saying, Ha'eretze osa miyedchem, do I want this carbon from you? This carbon, which is either a gozel, a stolen animal, or it's a piseach, it's dismembered, or it's a chole, it's a sick animal. So Ha'eretze? Ha'eretze is a question, but it doesn't expect an answer. Ha'eretze means, do I want such a carbon? Obviously, I don't want such a carbon. This is not the way you bring a carbon. Now, in the case of Piseach, I understand very well why this carbon is completely excluded from the Mizbeach. Because it's what? It's a Balmum, A Baal Mum is possible in his bath, completely disqualified. In the case of a Chola, if it has, again, a certain limited amount of time to live, then it might have the status of a Trefa, and therefore it's possible in his bath. Okay? So that's clear. But now we get to the third case, and it's the first case in the Pasuk, and that's Gazel. Now, from the fact that the Navi combines all this together in one breath, it sounds like there's some similarity. You know, where's the similarity between a Gazel and a Pisea? So the Gemara darshins in Torah Shebaal Peh the following. Ma Piseach, de lesle takanto, an animal that's missing a limb, there's no way of replacing the limb. You know, they didn't have what's called hashtalat evarim in those days, you know, what's called in English transplants, right? They didn't have organ transplants. So assuming the organ was cut off, that's an irreversible situation. And it's the irreversibility of this piseach that's being used to establish the nature of the psul of gozel. Af gozel, so too in the case of gozel, which is equated in this pasuk with piseach, lesle takanta. So you want to underline those three words, lesle takanta, which means that there's no way of fixing it up. It's an irreversible loss. Once the animal was stolen, forget it. You can no longer use it on the mizbeach. And now the Gemara is going to clarify, what does that mean? It's irreversible. There's no way of salvaging this karma. Loshna lifnei yeush, veloshna liachar yeush. We mentioned in the past, if you happen to recall, that when a goslin steals something and he takes the object into his domain, he's already well on the road to establish an acquisition and ownership on that object. The only problem is that there's something that serves as a barrier, a blockage, that doesn't allow him to make an acquisition on the object. By the way, he always has to pay for the object. Even if he acquires the object, he's going to have to pay its value. So again, we're going to have to go through a whole procedure in order for Beis Din, for the courts, to determine how much it was worth or how much it's on its value. And sometimes the value fluctuates and currency fluctuates in its value. But be that as it may, that's only as far as paying for the animal that was stolen. But as far as returning the animal itself, well, that depends. Did he make a kinyan? Has he acquired it? Did he not make a kinyan? Has he not acquired it? And the answer to that question lies in the concept of Yeush. Why? Because the barrier, the blockage that prevents his kinyan from completing itself, from, shall we say, maturing and reaching fruition, is the Chiyuv HaShava, the fact that he has to return the object. The Torah says, "Veheishiv esagzela shel gozel," that he has to steal the object that he stole. So you can't make a kinyan and acquire ownership on something that the Torah requires you to give back to its owner, to its real rightful owner. However, that chiyuv hashava, the obligation to return the stolen object, terminates with what? Yeush. Okay, so Yeush is the point in which the victim, the owner of the object, gives up hope. He declares his despair, and that's called Yeush. At that moment, what Yeush does is it removes the Chiyuv HaShava, the obligation to return the object itself. Again, as far as money is concerned, even after Yeush, the value of the object has to be paid back to its owner. But as far as ownership on the physical object that was stolen, in this case the animal that was stolen, Yeush removes the obligation that the Torah imposed on the Gazlan to return the stolen object. Once that obligation is removed, now the Gazlan's kinyan, which was sort of in, you know, it was in the shadows, it was lurking in the shadows, now it can come out full force, reach its fruition, and the Gazlan has a complete kinyan. But how did he acquire this lulav, or this karbon? Through what? Through gzela. So that's called mitzvah baba vera. And therefore, the Gemara says the following, loshna lifnei yeush, loshna liachar yeush. So the Gemara is saying that if, let's say, Reuven stole Shimon's animal, and now Reuven, the thief, wants to bring that animal on the on the Mizbeach. He can't do so. Why? Because the Torah equates Gozel, a stolen object, in this case a stolen animal, with Pisach. And just like Pisach, Lesle Takanta, so to Gozel, Lesle Takanta, meaning it doesn't matter. Loshna matters not whether it's Lifnei Yeush, Loshna, even if it was Li'achar Yeush. Nevertheless, this animal cannot be brought on the Mizbeach. So the Gemara says, let's analyze this. Bishleim, I can understand Lifnei Yeush, if he wants to bring the animal before the Nigzal, the victim has despaired and given up hope. The Pasuk says, and this you'll see in the second paragraph in the Torah, or this is at the very beginning of Sefer Vayikra, the Torah says, Daber al bnei Yisrael v'amarta aleihem, Adam ki akriv mikem, karman l'ashem. What does the extra word mikem mean?
Is that for ownership?
Ownership, exactly. Whenever it says lachem or mikem, it means you have to own it. So I understand very well that if the Gazlan wants to bring this animal onto the Mizbeach and Yeush has not taken place yet, Adam ki yakrev mikem, Omar Rachmon. The Torah says it's got to be mikem. It's got to be yours. V'lav dideu, and it doesn't belong to him. Right, Didei means his ownership. He doesn't have private ownership over the animal because a stolen object needs Yeush, and without Yeush there's no Kinyan. And therefore, it's not Mikem. If it's not Mikem, then certainly the carbon is possible. So if that be the case, how can you tell me that Li'achar Yeush, the animal is still considered disqualified to Mizbeah? Bishleim, I understand before Yeush. Okay, then it's not Mikem. The Gazan has not acquired ownership on it, and therefore he can't bring it as his carbon on the Mizbeah. But Chach, at least after Yeush, when now the Gazan acquires ownership, and this whole long Tosus, Hakanya B'Yeush, is going to discuss the fact that Yeush is Kone, meaning Yeush clinches the ownership of the Gazlan, is Ha Li'achar Yeush, the Gemara says, Ha Kanya B'Yeush, now the Gazlan has acquired full-fledged ownership through Yeush, and therefore it's Mikem. And if it's Mikem, why should the carbon be excluded? So again, we have this very strange Yalfusa, and we don't understand this Yalfusa. The Yalfusa tells me to equate Gozel with Pisach. Just like Pisach Lesle Takanta, so too Gozel Lesle Takanta. You can't fix up the Gozel, and at no point would you be allowed to bring this Gozel, the stolen animal, on the Mizbeach. Why? I can understand you can't bring it before Yeush because it's not Mikem and the Gazan has not acquired ownership. But Chach Li'achar Yeush, now it's Dideihu, it belongs to him, and if it belongs to him, he should be able to bring this carbon on the Mizbeach. Elo Lav. The Gemara says the only way I can understand this is Mishum, because the Havi Le Mitzvah Ba Ba'Avera. Because how did he acquire ownership over this animal? Through an Avera, he was a Gazlan. Ah, you want to bring this on the Mizbeach after you stole it and you violated the Avera of Gezel? That you can't do. Why? Because the Torah says that Gezel Dumya de Pisach. And that Dumya de Pisach, that equation, that analogy between Gozel and Pisach tells you that it's irreversible. Why is it irreversible? You would say that after Yeush he was Kona, and then he could bring it as his carbon. It's Mikem. No. It still remains Pasul L'Mizbeach for a whole different reason. And what's that? Mitzvah Ba Be'Avera. Yeah.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah, now's a perfect time to ask a question. So I was hoping that... That's why I reviewed it 5 times in order to wait for someone to ask a question.
So there's a concept of Mum She'avar, that will pass... So I'm thinking Gezel is also like, it's an Avera, but it's going to pass once there's Yeush, and why can't they make that analogy?
So right now, we have to assume that although the Kinyan is something that passes, but the Avera doesn't pass. Mm. Meaning once this object is stolen, that state or that status of a stolen object, the Avera, is so intrinsic into the object. I mean, again, we'll talk about this more when we get to the second shiur, 11:44, but it's so intrinsic into the object that it's irreversible. That's a stolen animal.
I mean, even if there's a Yeush, and even if you paid, and even if you paid Kol Mishum, doesn't it clean?
Again, it doesn't matter, because all those payments and all those Yeushes only help you as far as ownership is concerned. That belongs to a section in Shulchan Aruch which is called Choshen Mishpat. But we're not dealing with Choshen Mishpat. We're not dealing with the monetary laws. We're dealing with the Arachayim laws. In other words, the religious ritual laws. And as far as the religious status of this Karban is concerned, the Torah says, I find this despicable. How did you acquire this Karban? What facilitated your ability to bring this animal onto his back?
Theft.
That's already a stolen goods. We don't want stolen goods on the Mizbeach. And that's because it's similar to Pesach. Is there anything you can do for an animal that's a Pesach? It's missing a limb? Nothing. But the question is, what about Chola? After all, why not take the word Gazel and equate it with a Chola? If the animal is ill, that's a reversible situation. We should send the animal to the vet. So the Tzam Sofer is famous for saying that when we learn Hekeshim, we always analyze the sequence of the pasuk. And in the sequence of the pasuk, where does the word Gazel appear? Does it appear continuous to Chole or continuous to Pesach? To Pesach. The Torah could have easily have written Veivesem es haPesach ves haChole v'es haGazel. If the Torah would have said that, then we're only dealing with a monetary issue, a temporary issue. We have a passing problem. We have a problem here, like in the case of Chola, the animal has to get back on its health, and in the case of a Gazel, the animal has to be acquired by the Gazlan. That we can solve. Through what? Through Yesh. But the Torah went out of its way to put Gazel at the very beginning of this pasuk, right before the word Pesach. And that gives me a linkage between Gazel and Pesach. What's the difference between Pesach and Chola? Whereas Chola is reversible, and we can bring the animal back to health if you have a good vet. But in the case of Pesach, nobody can help this animal. It's gone.
And that's why the Gemara quotes the first part of the pasuk instead of the second, because that's more. That's kind
correct.
Of the point.
Well, we need the first part of the pasuk even without the Chassam Sofer. What do I mean? Because we can't just quote the pasuk. Eretz Zos Miedchem. You know, Hashem, you wouldn't know what you're referring to. So we got to get that word Gazel in. But you're right. I mean, part of the emphasis here in this pasuk is that the word Gazel comes before and continues to Pesach. Ben?
Why don't we compare Gazela to Avodah Zarah, Yer Nidacha, which is also irreversible? Like anything here is going to be burned, and it seems like it'd be even a better comparison.
Setosis is going to be Machadish, an unbelievable Chiddush. Setosis says that the only time a carbon, an animal, becomes possible is when that Avera would have. Let's see it the other way around. It would have been impossible, this is a double negative, but it would have been impossible to bring this carbon without the Avera. You hear that double negative? Meaning, it's the in the positive sense, it's the Avera that sets up the possibility of bringing the carbon. So in the case of the Asherah, the fact that this animal was worshipped by somebody is totally irrelevant to my ability or lack thereof of bringing this animal on the Mizbeach. It's only an overlap, it's really a coincident. It's a coincidental overlap that there was an Avera done on this object. Not so, says Tosfos, in the case of Gzela. In the case of Gzela, let's assume I have no other animal. Again, we have to know what the law is if I have another animal that's not stolen. But let's say he has no other animal. And this is the only animal he can bring. He doesn't own it. Not only that, he doesn't possess it. So what's the only way that he can get access to this animal and then bring it on the Mizbeach? Gzela. He has to steal it. So if the only way he could set up the mitzvah is by violating the Avera, that's called mitzvah baba Avera.
I mean, but there's a difference between Avodah Zarah and Nir Didacha. Someone worshipped this animal is one thing, but the fact that it's part of Nir Didacha means it has to be burned. There's no ownership for something that's completely hefker.
So again, if you talk about ownership, you have a very good point. I thought you were focusing on mitzvah baba Avera. I was just pointing out that the fact that this lulav finds itself growing in an Nir Didachas, that is totally coincidental to the mitzvah of lulav. You're right, there are going to be other issues with this lulav. But if you want to raise the issue of mitzvah baba Avera, that's irrelevant. Why? Because Tosis is this major revolutionary idea of Tosis, which seriously restricts the application, the scope of mitzvah baba Avera. When does mitzvah baba Avera apply? Only, says Tosis, if ha mitzvah ba machmas Avera. And that's what we call the causative relationship between the Avera and the mitzvah. But if there's a coincidental relationship between the two, that's not mitzvah baba Avera. So take, for example, a person would eat matzah on the Leil HaSeder, and through that achila, he would violate another Avera. Let's say this matzah was made of tevah. Tevel is before the afrasha of Truvus and Masrus, right? So you're not allowed to eat Tevel. So when he eats this matzah on Leil HaPesach, paradoxically, he's violating an avera and he's fulfilling a mitzvah. Would that be mitzvah bob avera? No, according to Tosfos, not. Because it's not that the tevel caused the mitzvah. Even if it wasn't tevel, he has the mitzvah. I meant to say, it's not the avera's tevel did not cause the mitzvah. It wasn't a causative relation. It wasn't because of the tevel that he was able to eat the matzah. Even if the tevel was a coincidental overlap with the mitzvah of matzah. Okay, so that's...
Can you launder this animal? I mean, once...
You know, to give it over to a third party.
Well, yeah, after Yehush, and now you own it, you sell it. Does that money allow you to...
So that's an interesting question, Steve. And for that, we'd have to really get into the nitty-gritty details of a lulav hagozel. What I suggest is, because it's going to come up here in the Gemara itself, because it's very interesting, the Gemara says that the Hadassim were purchased from the non-Jews in that particular social context. And these Hadassim were stolen. And the Gemara looks for a way in which you could purchase these Hadassim from the non-Jewish sellers and it wouldn't be disqualified on the Mitzvah Bav Aver. And that's going to be your question. Because the Gzela was presumably implemented by the seller, who was a non-Jew. That doesn't mean that I can't buy it from him. If I could buy it from him and acquire ownership, let's say if there was Yehush, then is this called a mitzvah bob avera? Do I, as a third party, have to worry about the fact that it was the non-Jewish seller who was the gazlan? He was the thief. I wasn't the thief. So that's going to come up here at the bottom of this omen. Now, strangely enough, the Gemara is now about to quote another source for mitzvah bob aver. You know, I got very excited about the Pesukim Malachi. I worked very hard to try to understand the Pesukim Malachi. Es ha-gozel, es ha-piseach. And now the Gemara has a different source from a different Pesuk. Now, obviously, if the Gemara is going to quote a different source, then just methodologically, what does the Talmud Chacham who's learning this Gemara have to ask?
What's
wrong with the first source? Not only that, you're going to have to ask ultimately a second question. Namely, what? What's wrong with the second source? Right? Because why did you need the first source? Okay. So let's take a look at the second source. The Omar, Rabbi Yochanan, Mishum, Rabbi Shimon, Ben Yochai, it is the famous Rashbi, my dechsiv. What does the Pasuk mean? Now again, this is again a Pasuk in Tanakh. This is the third paragraph number Gimel on your Torah R. So we'll read the entire pasuk. This is a pasuk in Yeshayahu Novi. Ki ani Hashem, God defines Himself as someone who's oev mishpat. I love justice. Sone gozel, I find it tolerable to steal. Biola. Now, what does the word biola mean? Take the bays out, and what are you left with?
Ola.
An ola. What's an ola? It's a carbon, correct. It's a carbon ola. What's unique about a carbon ola in the matrix of carbonos is that it's kulo kolil. There's no achila, meaning you can't eat any part of the carbon. Until now, we've been dealing with carbonos where you could eat part of the carbon, but now we're talking about an ola. And the pasuk says sone gozel bi ola. I can't tolerate a stolen ola. V'nasati pu'ulasam bi'emes u'bris olam echos lahem. Meaning, I'm willing to take from you emes, truth. I'm willing to entertain an eternal covenant with you, but only if it's built on emes, on truth, but not on immorality, not on stealing something. Says Reb Shimon Bar Yochai, Ma'idichsiv, what does the pasuk mean? Ki ani Hashem oev mishpat, sone gezel bi'ola. Very strange pasuk. You know, why did... Rav Shimon Bar Yochai is asking the following question. What does my dechsiv mean? Whenever you see my dechsiv, what does that imply? That there's a problem in the pasuk. Again, I'm trying to give you guys hints as to how to learn the Vlad Gemara. So whenever it says my dechsiv, that you have to always rack your brains and figure out what bothered the Gemara. I mentioned to you the other day that there's a book called What Bothered Rashi. You know, when you look at Rashi, you always have to ask yourself, what bothered Rashi? So if a Gemara says, Maidat Siv, what does this Pasuk mean? Obviously, the simple meaning of the Pasuk eludes us. And why is that? Because why mention an Ola here? The whole concept of an Ola seems to be irrelevant. It's out of left field. You know, you want to talk about Mishpat, you want to talk about Gezel, you can talk about the fact that God doesn't tolerate Gezel. He loves Mishpat. He loves justice and righteousness. But you don't have to add an Ola into the opinion. So in order to answer this question, Rabbi Yochanan, in the name of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, gives a whole mashal, a whole complicated simile or metaphor. But before we get to this, let me see if we can answer our previous question. What would perhaps bother us if we only had the first pasuk? What compelled the Gemara to bring a second pasuk? As I told you before, the first pasuk refers to karbonos, but it doesn't specify which karbon. In the second pasuk, it specifies exactly which karbon, namely what? A karbon ola. Why is the Gemara feel that, you know, what's on the agenda, what we really need to, is to establish that Hashem will not accept this ola? Meaning, if we didn't have the second pasuk, we might have assumed that the first pasuk only disqualifies rov karbonos, you know, 90% of the karbonos, but not that 10% which is called an ola. In the case of an ola, Hashem will accept the ola.
Why would we have thought that? From the first one?
What did he say?
Why from the first one would we have maybe thought that exclusion would work?
I don't know. That's what I'm asking you.
No, but
in fine, right now I'm on the level of structure. You know, we'll get Menachem as an answer to your question, but I want to make sure that you feel the structure. The structure is that the second pasuk went one step further than the first pasuk because it extended the psul karbon in the case of Gozel to Ola. And that was specified and spelled out in the second pasuk. The first pasuk just spoke about karbonos in general.
Right.
The Gemara seems to be compelled to want to know if that principle that you've established based on Malachi will apply even to a karbon Ola. And now we have to rack our brains, which is your question, Richard. Why would we think that Ola is different than any other carbon?
A chedikin knows that if it's not...
I didn't hear you. A what? A cheder. Oh, a cheder, yeah.
Knows if it's not... If mitzvah ababe, if an avera is not besener, so... It's not besener, you don't need the second pasuk.
Oh, so that's what I'm trying to figure out. What was the havamina, you know, that Ola is different? Okay. So here, Mitch, you have an answer?
In Ola, you don't get any part of the karbon.
Ooh, excellent.
The karbon, you actually eat part of
it. In other words, the Torah doesn't want you to benefit from an avera. In Ola, you get very, very little benefit from the avera. In all karbonis, you have a major benefit from the avera. From the avera. Because as a result of this avera, you're able to bring the karbon. And guess what? If you're a steak eater, bringing a karbon is a great thing. In fact, I think, Don, you assumed, if I'm not mistaken, that the Kohanim had problems because they ate so much meat. Didn't you once tell me that?
That was my understanding.
Yeah, okay.
I'm not blaming you for that. I think I know my source, and I don't know where he got it from.
Okay, I'll just...
He was a Kohen.
I only mentioned this to remind you of a conversation that we had a few
Maybe
months
Maybe it was an assumption, I don't know.
Yeah. Anyway... I'm a Berzon, so Berzons are meat lovers by definition. You know, there's no such thing as a vegetarian Berzon. It's like a steer in a bay. Okay, it's a self-contradictory. So we love meat, and we love bringing carbonos because, you know, that gives us an opportunity not only to eat the meat and enjoy it, but also to do a mitzvah at the same time. So that's great. You know, it's like on Yontif. You eat a good steak on Yontif, you get two things. You get to eat the steak and you get to be mekayem the mitzvah simchas Yontif. Well, for example, Leil HaPesach. You know, some say that when the Rosha asks the question, Ma avodah zos lachem, right, so there are 50 different interpretations. What bothered the Rosha? What kasha was he asking? So some say that his kasha was avodah. Ma avoda zos lachem. You were sitting down and eating lamb chops, and you're calling this an avoda? Come on, who are you fooling? Afata hakeh, she'd have hit him in the teeth because he has no clue why God gave us teeth. God gave us teeth so that we eat the lamb chop and we do it as an avoda. We serve Hashem, we elevate. Anyway.
We don't eat lamb chops on Malveda, right?
Why not? It's lamb. Lamb is excellent. And it's got to be tzli. It's got to be roast.
Anytime.
Oh, you mean an avatar.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. I meant, you're right. Right. I left out the punchline. I was talking at the time of the base. I'm English. Sorry. Okay. So here's Mitch's answer. Mitch is saying the following: I need a special pasuk by Ola because he's not benefiting that much from Ola. Ola is completely burnt on the Mizbeach. You come home with no benefits whatsoever. But I want to share with you an insight of the Netziv Mivalozhin. He was the great Rosh Yeshiva, the Valozhin Yeshiva, which is called like the mother of all yeshivot. The Netziv wants to claim that if we only had the first pasuk, the pasuk in Malachi, we would assume that the psul of Gozel applies in the following scenario. Reuven steals Shimon's animal. The animal is chulin. What does chulin mean? Before what?
Before
Akdosha. He hasn't yet sanctified the animal. In such a case, he stole a behemoth chulin. And now he wants to make it into Hekdesh? To transform an animal that was stolen into Hekdesh? That you can't do. The second pasuk tells me that it's already a done deal. What did he steal? He stole an ola. What does it mean he stole an ola? Who is Magdish the Karbon? The original owner. And now the original owner is on his way to the Beis HaMikdash. You know, he's got his little shepsula, you know, his little sheep there, and he's holding on to it. He's got his tarmil, you know, his knapsack on his back, and he's climbing up to the Beis HaMikdash, and lo and behold, Reuven grabs him and steals the sheep from him. But it's already an ola. In that case, that's not really mitzvah b'avera, because the kedusha, the sanctity of the animal, was already intrinsic in the animal. It's an ola, it's a done deal. The rightful owner already sanctified the animal and designated it as a karban. It's a full-fledged ola. That ola has to be brought in the mizbeach. Whether it's brought by its rightful owner, it's brought by the gazel, maybe it makes no difference.
So maybe the balim would still get would be
maybe the kaparo would relate to the balim. Says the netziv, we need the second pasuk for a case where he stole an ola. The first pasuk is he stole a behemas chulin, and now he himself, the gazel, wants to be magdish it. Oh, that's a terrible thing. The Torah can't tolerate being magdish a stolen karban. But if it's already a karban, it's an ola, maybe then the Torah would say, bring the karban, and we'll add Ben's addition, and then the karban will count on the scorecard for the original owner. Brilliant chiddush of the Nitzan. So now let's see the mashal of Rav Shimon bar Yochai. He says the following. Mashal Melech Basar V'dam. Now let me ask you the following question. We're talking about a human king. And here I'm going to ask you a very strange question. And maybe you'll give me two different answers. I don't know. I'm hoping you'll give me the answer that I'm looking for. But I can... Does a king pay taxes for the treasury? Give me a gut reaction.
No.
He owns everything. I mean, everything is in the treasury. Again, we're talking, you know, we're used to the West and the democratic societies, like South Africa is very democratic, right? No, I'm just joking. But anyway, so we used to kings that, you know, like Britain has a king, right? Or a queen. Okay, so we don't have a king. Back in the day, they had a king, right? So the queen... Yeah, you know, the queen, let's say in a democratic society, maybe she has certain rights to the treasury. I don't know if she has any rights to the treasury in Britain, but I wouldn't say that she owns all the money of Britain. You know what I'm saying? But in the old days, you know, back in biblical times, a king had absolute ownership over everything. I used to know how to say this in Latin, but I forgot. There's a term in Latin for it. Anyway, so now it comes out that the melech is passing... Hayaover, he's passing by the Beis HaMechas. Beis HaMechas, the word Mechas means the tax collectors. The Beis HaMechas means they had a separate budka, you know, they had some sort of a hut where they would collect the taxes, and every person would have to get online. He'd have to declare all his income, and they would... So the king is passing by the Beis HaMechas. Omar Liavodov, and he turns to his servants, and he says to them, Tnu Mechas Lamochsin, pay up taxes. So they returned to him. They said, everything is yours. It is very odd. You're like taking it from one end and putting it into one pocket and putting it into the other pocket. You know what the king says? This is a very righteous king. He says, many from me, from my actions, yilmedu, everybody's going to learn, kol ovrei drachim, everyone who's going by, V'lo yavrichu atzman min ameches. They will not try to cheat paying the taxes. Lavriach means when you try to
smuggle
something over the border. My father told me that after the camps in Europe were freed, you know, after World War II, so, you know, they divided up the city of Berlin into four parts. And a lot of the Jews who were dying of starvation, in order to make a living, they would smuggle like cigarettes and other things from one side to the other. So smuggling sometimes is to avoid. Now I'm not saying we should evade taxes, but sometimes it's a matter of pikuach nefesh. You know, that's a different story. But the king wants to set an example. He certainly is exempt legally from paying taxes, but he's going to say this: I want everybody to see that I'm paying taxes, and they'll follow suit. Afa Kodesh Baruch Hu Omar Ani Hashem. Now we get back to the pasuk in Yeshayahu Novi, I am your God. Sone gezel bi'ola. Now, what does God mean? Sone gezel. What is stolen? Nothing is stolen from God. God owns everything. Lashem ha'aretz umloa. Right? God owns everything. Mimeni yilmedu. I'm going to reject this gezel. Why? I want everybody to learn from me. Bonai, my children. V'avrichu atzmon min hagezel. They should avoid any situation of gezel. Now, I'll both say, the truth be told here, I don't exactly understand this mashal. Meaning, I understand the mashal, but I don't know exactly how that clarifies the point that Rav Shimon bar Yochai wants to make. Bishleim, I understand in the case of taxes, the king wants to say that even though technically I'm exempt from the taxes, the money is going from one end to the other, I own all the money in the treasury. Nevertheless, he's going to make we call it a dugma yishit, right? He's going to make a personal example. He's going to be the paradigm in case. And I'm going to teach the people not to avoid paying taxes. But in the case of a stolen animal, that's a whole different story. You want to know whether you could bring a stolen animal on the mizbeach. Yeah, what do you say, Tom?
Because the Ola totally belongs to Hashem. None of it belongs to the person who's bringing it.
Excellent.
So Hashem's saying, even in the case where I own the entire Ola, even that excellent. I won't accept.
That you have no ownership really in this Ola. This Ola is totally yours. So I want to read to you a line here that I found. You know that in the back of the Masechta is something called the Yalkut HaBi'urim. And I was curious to know if he was bothered by this mashal. And I was very happy to know that he also was bothered by this mashal. He says, L'chore, he says at first glance, I don't understand. What's the point of this mashal? He says there's no dimyon, there's no equation. In the case where the melech has no reason whatsoever to give taxes, to pay taxes, so why does he pay taxes? And that was the question in the mashal. But in the case of a karban, I understand why HaKadosh Baruch Hu rejects this karban. It's a stolen karban. So what was the need for this mashal here? What do you clarify? How did you embellish this and add something by couching it in terms of this metaphor? In the case of the meches, clearly the king has no... He's really setting an example. He's teaching us because he has no reason to pay the meches. But in the case of a karban, somebody's bringing a karban and it's a stolen karban. Hashem has to decide whether he's going to accept it or not, but that has nothing to do with the case of the meches. So he quotes, in order to answer this, he quotes the Sfas Emes. I don't know if you ever heard of the Sfas Emes. He was the Ger Rebbe, way back. And the Sfas Emes in turn quotes a Medrash. And the Medrash says that there's a difference between two types of karbanos. One is called behema, an animal, and the other is called an oaf, a bird. Right, we bring karbanos both from zvachim, which is animals, and from ofos, which are birds. And the Medrash says that although we bring the oaf on the mizbeach, in fact, there's something called an olas oaf, which is completely consumed on the mizbeach. However, the Torah went out of its way to say v'hishlich esmar os. Okay, there's something inside the kishkis of the bird, which I guess we call in modern Hebrew it's called a zefek. I think in English it's called an esophagus, I'm not sure. Okay, and the esophagus has to be rejected. It can't be brought on the mizbeach. So the Medrash says, what's the problem with the esophagus? And the Medrash says, Sha'of nizom min hagezel. Now again, you might ask me the following question. Why is a bird more guilty of eating stolen food? You know, it's, what's the word, swoop? How do you say it in English?
Yes.
It swoops down, you know, and gets its prey, and it's stolen prey. I don't know why that's more true.
It's not a bird of prey, it's a domestic bird.
Okay, so even a domestic bird, I guess, goes, bird. You know, any food that you give it, it doesn't matter whether it's yours or his, you know, the oaf is going
to
take
but
it.
But the owners have to keep it.
I don't know why that's not true for Bema. What?
Don't the owners have to keep it, you know, like animals within some parameters?
Okay, but we're talking about the nature of an oaf, right? The nature of the oaf. So we're suspicious of this oaf that it was eating menagezel. That's, again, I can't defend the Medrash, but you know the Medrash was you know like 2,000 years before me. So if you have any qualms here, send a letter to the Medrash. But the Medrash says, you know, usually we don't ask questions in kashrut. You know, the Torah says that the maraso has to be removed, that it can't be brought on the mizbeach, even though it's a carbon ola. Why? So shteit. That's what it says in the pasuk. I can't give any answers. But the Medrash gives an answer, and the Medrash says because the oaf is nizo min hagezel. Okay, the oaf eats stolen stuff. Yeah, Don?
Because in its natural habitat, not if it's a kept bird, but the bird swoops down and if you know in the farm, so it takes the seeds and things which belong to.
Okay, you know. Fine. Oh. So the following is so here's the question. Haray, ba'oaf, ain't ba meshu ochel mishum gezel, I wouldn't call that stealing, technically, dekach I briyoso. This is the way God created. In other words, man lives in a moral, you know, God injected into man a moral sense. You can anticipate that man should understand that he doesn't put his hand into Yenim's pocket and steal. But what do you want for us being the shoulder? You know, why is the bird guilty here of any crime? Kachi briyasa. Oh, he says, Hareze domel l'nimsha. The kevan shekachu rotzan abore, ein bo gezel v'afal pichen Hashem sone gezel v'ol. Even though there's no reason to fault and find the oaf guilty of gezel, nevertheless Hashem wants to make an example of the oaf, and he wants to say that this food that was digested by the oaf is stolen food. V'lachen, and therefore the Torah says v'hishlich es maroso. Therefore, you should throw away this esophagus and don't burn it on the mizbeach. He writes in the footnote that the pasuk says sone gezel biola. Why does it say sone? Oh, okay, this is a little bit more complicated. So, in any event, it comes out now that according to the Sfas Emes, the mashal here is a lot more complicated than we think it is. The mashal is trying to tell us something about the ola. The carbon ola, in this case, let's say it was an ola sa'of, right? It was a bird. So, you know, we understand in the case of the meches that the king has no requirement to pay the taxes, but he wants to set an example. How does that shed a light on the case of an ola? And the answer is we're talking about an ola sa'of. And if we talk about an ola sa'of, then to the same extent that the king is not required to what? To pay taxes, so too the oaf should not be held responsible and guilty of gezel, because that's the way God created it. The oaf is going to come up in front of the judgment in the high courts and it's going to say, well, God, that's the way you created me. And yet, the Torah wants to make an example. And the Torah is going to say that the oaf should not, that part of the oaf, should not be brought on the mizbeach. You see the extent to which God hates gezel. So that it comes out that according to Rav Yochanan, in the name of Rav Shimon bar Yochai, the second pasuk, which mentions the ola for whatever reasons we gave, and extends the principle of disqualifying a stolen ola, even to this case, says Rav Yochanan, in the name of Shimon bar Yochai, I want to illustrate this. I'm going to give you a mashal, and this mashal will shed a light on ola. That even though the carbon ola per se might have no, you know, it might be so far removed from Gezel. For example, it's going Kulei Kolil on the Mizbeach, as Mitch said before, it's completely burnt on the Mizbeach. Or the way the Netziv says it, he wasn't even Makdish it after he stole it. He was, or he already took a... So you have many, many reasons why in the case of an Ola, you might think that there's no psul of Mitzvah Bav Avera. Comes along the Sfasem, he adds another element. I have another reason why the Ola shouldn't be held guilty, because it's an oaf. And you're telling me that the oaf, we don't bring any part of the oaf that is even remotely reminiscent of something that's stolen. So that's how far we have to go with this psul of Gezel.
He brings down the Das Kedoshim, I don't know who that is, but he makes a very nice analogy. It says when the Melech goes by the tax house, what happens is the tax collectors get a cut of the taxes. Mm. So if he doesn't,
he doesn't give
the taxes, then the tax collectors lose something. And similarly with the Ola doesn't go completely on his bail. The Ola goes to the Kohanim. So if you don't bring it as a korban, then the Kohanim lose their share.
They lose their share. And that's the reason...
It compares the mechas, the tax collectors, not...
Okay, wait, let me just think. Is that a reason... I'm trying to figure out which direction. Is that a reason to be machshir the korban or to pasul the korban? Let me just think for a second. Since you're cutting out the... I think he's saying that that's a... Tell me if you agree with me, Mitch, that that's a reason to be machshir the korban. The chiddush is that even so the korban is pasul. I might have thought, why do we want to cut out... Why do we want to cut out the Kohen, right? Why do we want to apostle this Kohen and cut out the Kohen? He's going to lose the R. So the Torah says, you know what? It's similar to the king. And the king doesn't want to cut out the Ishmeches, right, from his cut. And yet, just one second, the king doesn't want to cut him out from his portion. And therefore to make sure that the Ishmeches gets his cut, therefore he's going to pay the Meches. So too in the case of Ola. I don't know. It has to go the other way, right?
It's Fakal. He stated his purpose. Mm-hmm. He didn't say anything about the Ishmeches.
No, Fakal.
He wants to set an example. That's it.
Right.
So the Ishmeches is irrelevant. It's not part of his.
Right. Thinking. No, I was thinking that we're looking for Chiddush here. That even though I don't know, I don't. I'm missing a piece of the puzzle.
I don't know.
No, it's Fakal. He's talking about the person who comes and he gives the oiler. That just like the king wants to give a good feeling to everybody who comes, and he says, "Oh, I did like the king."
Uh-huh.
So the one who comes and gives an oiler, even though it's stolen, first of all, it's true that the kohanim they don't need the or that's stolen; they have enough. So they wouldn't want that, and also the king.
Oh, they don't want the or. I thought you were saying they want the or.
They had enough, and so they don't need to have stolen if they knew it was stolen. And the one who comes and gives it, so then they say, oh, he gave a donation, he's a knacker, and he gets good feeling. So therefore the marshal comes and says, no, you know, it's
right.
that
it's still possible.
I think the part about the
swallowing.
I should know it.
Okay, well, so let's go on. If you don't mind, we only have 10 minutes left, and I'll take your questions later. Itmar, we learned in a Itmar means an Amoraim literature. Nami, also the same thing. Omrav Ami, Yovesh Posel, Mipnesh Ein Hadar. It's not considered Hadar, it's dried up. Gozel Posel, Mishum Dehavile Mitzah Baba Vera. Okay, so we have this clarified, and again, Rashi, if you remember, he says that the word hadar here means that it's lacking in zeke uviyaveyu. You remember that we discussed that, and that's why it's possible all 7 days. And likewise, a stolen lulav is possible all 7 days because of mitzvah haba baver upliga derav Yitzchak. This whole series of rabbis, right, and they all maintain the same position, the same psak halacha, this principle that if it's stolen, it's possible. That's all against Rav Yitzchak. The Omar Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Nachmeni, Omar Shmuel, Rabbi Yitzchak, in the name of Shmuel, says, Lo Shanu El of Yontif Rishon. When is Gazel possible? That's only on the first day of Yontif, because it's not his. Amal B'Yontif Sheni, but for the balance of Yontif, Mitoshi Yotze B'Shol, since he can fulfill his mitzvah with a borrowed lulav, Yotze Nami B'Gazel. He could also be Yotze with a stolen lulav. So this is fascinating, because if we assume, as we try to push, the Tosis holds that this whole psul of mitzvah B'Aveir is Doraisa, and Rabbi Yitzchak, in the name of Shmuel, is rejecting it. So this is not a secondary machlokas. You know, it's Rabbi Yitzchak says that he doesn't buy into this whole principle of mitzvah b'aveir. He's going to agree that gozel is possible, but only when? On the first day. Why is gozel excluded on the first day? Lachem, he doesn't have ownership of it. But as far as the balance of the yontif is concerned, where there's no requirement of lachem, then Rabbi Yitzchak is going to say that the lulav gozel is kosher. So if I ask you a quiz question in the middle of the night, when, you know, according to what combination would you say that a lulav gozel is kosher? According to Rabbi Yitzchak in the rest of the yontif. Not the first day, because the first day it's already possible because of a different reason, but for the balance of yontif, it would be kosher, according to Rabbi Yitzchak.
I'm kind of bothered by comparing gezeila with borrowing. Borrowing is mutual consent. Can I borrow? Yes, of course. Gezeila is...
It's not.
What's that?
It's not lachem.
In both cases, it's not
lachem. But still, comparing borrowing, mutually consenting, yes, I'll lend it to you.
No, he's just using borrowing to illustrate that borrowing is only a problem on the first day.
Right.
There's no problem of borrowing a lulav on the second day.
But because you can borrow, you can also do gezeila and it would work.
And again, you know, if the whole problem with gezeila is that it's not yours, then on the second day you can take something that's stolen.
You can also borrow without asking.
How does he handle?
Well, that's complicated. Yeah, for that you have to know a sugya in Masechta Pesachim.
What does that mean for his understanding of mitzvah
Havavah Vera? He doesn't have the principle. He never heard of it. Again, you could ask, what does he do with all these psukim that we mentioned? You know, that you have to go back to the drawing board and figure out how he understands these psukim. And I'll tell you what I think the answer to that question is: that Rabbi Yitzchak holds that all those psukim that you've quoted only apply to mizbeach. In Hilchas Karbonos, the requirements of a karbon on the Mizbeach of HaKadosh Baruch Hu are very, you know, very high standards. You know, you just can't bring something on the Mizbeach. You know, most of the Masechet Zvachim is about what you can't bring, what you're not allowed to bring on the Mizbeach. You know, to use the Mizbeach is a very scary thing. So you're quoting Psukim that Hashem is Sone Gezel. Okay, that's as far as a karbon is concerned. But what does that have to do with a lulav? There's a famous Ritva. The Ritva says that mitzvah b'aveira is possible on a doraisa level in only two cases: karbon and lulav. And he says that the reason why lulav fits into the bill of mitzvah b'aveira is because of the mitzvah nanuim. He says that when you take a lulav, you do nanuim. You shake the lulav, and the shaking of the lulav is called ritsui. Resh sadi vav yud. Now that word ritsui is exclusive for karbonos, and the Ritva is breaking new ground here. He's saying that there's something that goes beyond karbon that also has ritsui to it, and that's lulav. I once heard from my Rebbe many years ago that Shabbos also has ritzu. It's like bringing a karma. That's why, what's the main paragraph that we add on Shabbos in benching?
Ritzeh.
Because there's ritzu through Shabbos. Okay, this is a philosophical discussion how Shabbos generates ritzu. But the Ritva is outstanding and explicit to say that lulav through nanuim generates ritzu. Resh Tzadi Vav Yud. Ritzui brings something in front of Hashem, and a gozel that Hashem can't tolerate. Masiv. What does masiv mean? Masiv is the verb of meisvei. Meisvei means what? I'll ask you a question. I'll raise an objection. Masiv Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak Lulav Hagozel Vayavesh. Possible. The Mishnah says that Gozel and Yavesh is possible. What's omitted from the Mishnah? Shaul, a bar lulav. Does the Mishnah breathe a word about a bar lulav? Ha. Ha means the implication is that Shaul, a bar lulav, is kosher. So let's ask the question, Amos. What day of the Yontif are we having here? Elam, if you're going to tell me, Yontif Rishon, it's on the first day. Haksiv lachem, mishalachem. Shaul is not yours. Hi, this lulav that you borrowed from someone else. Lav, it's not the dehu. It's not yours. Elolab, Yontif Sheni. So the Mishnah must be talking about Yontif Sheni, and that's why it omits Shaul, because if we're talking about all 7 days, Shaul is not in the... Shaul cannot be admitted into the equation. And nevertheless, Katani Gozel, Possel. If the Mishnah is addressing all 7 days, and Gozel is explicitly mentioned, enumerated as a disqualified lulav, it must be that we're going beyond Lachem. This is not Lachem. If the problem was only Lachem, the absence of Lachem, then why would the lulav be Possel all 7 days? And this is very similar to what we had before, if you remember on the previous Omer, called Pasik Vitani. Lo Shnavi Yontif Rishon, Lo Shnavi Yontif Sheni. So now the Gemara wants to defend Rabbi Yitzchak in the name of Shmuel, that even though there's no psul of mitzvah bav aveira, I can still interpret the Mishnah. How so? Liolam, really, I'm going to go back to my premise. The Yontif Rishon, the Mishnah is only addressing Yontif Rishon. And the problem here, the Chisaron, is Lachem, that it's not his, you don't have ownership. So why doesn't it mention Shaul? Lo mi baikamar. The Mishnah wants to tell you a bigger chiddush. Sometimes the Mishnah leaves out the easy, simple case in order to tell you the more mechudash case, the bigger chiddush, right? Lo mi baikamar. Lo mi bai Shaul. I don't even have to tell you Shaul. De lav di dehu. It's certainly not his. He didn't make any sort of an acquisition. He didn't do a kinyan at all. It's completely devoid of a kinyan. Avol gozel, but I might have thought, if not for our Mishnah, then in a stolen case, Ema, maybe he did make a kinyan. Through what? Through Yeush. How so through Yeush? Ema, I might think, stam gzela. In a normal case of gzela, Yeush bailim hu. The person gives up hope, because usually a gozlin comes with arm. He's armed, you know. He's got a very powerful arm, right? So you don't really have hope to get it back from the mafia, you know. I would not. This is very cultural, but I don't know if in England there's a mafia. Now they say there's one here. I hope not, but I don't want to believe it because it's Lashon Hara. But I would not encourage anyone to start up with the mafia, you know, if they stole whatever they took from you. Yeah, just swallow it as a law, see if you can get back anything from insurance. I would not, you know. So that's called a gazlan. And therefore, Yeish Bailam, you know, you're going to give up hope. You really can't hold out much hope to get it back from the gazlan. Is therefore Kidney Day Dummy. Now, paradoxically, the gazlan acquires ownership over the stolen object. In this case, over the stolen lua. Kamash Malan, that's what the Mishnah wants to tell us, that this lulav that was stolen is possible because of Lachem, meaning that there is no Yeush, and the Gazlan does not acquire ownership over it. And we're not going to accept the principle of Stam Gzel Yeush Bailun. And on which day of Sukkot is the Lulav possible? On the first day, and only on the first day, where the Torah requires Lukatam Lachem. But Enochinami, in the balance, so you wanted to prove from the fact that Shaul was omitted that we must be talking about all 7 days, and that's why Shaul was omitted. No. Shaul is written. It's in between the lines. That's called Lomi Bai. Lomi Bai means the Mishnah skipped over Shaul to tell you a bigger chiddush. That you might think that Shaul has a problem because it's not Lachem. There's no even attempt at a kinyan. But in the case of Gozel, where we're very close to a kinyan, we almost could clinch the ownership, the acquisition of the Gozel, because Stam Gzela Yeush Bailim Hu. Kamash Malon, the Mishnah wants to tell me no. The Chiddush of our Mishnah in Gozel has nothing to do with Masechta Sukkah. It really belongs to the Masechta Bava Kama, which is dedicated to the laws of Gzela. Do you follow what I'm saying? The extra kamashvalon here is not in Hilchas Sukkah. I mean, it has an implication in Hilchas Sukkah and repercussions in Hilchas Sukkah that the gazlan cannot use this lulav to fulfill his mitzvah of lulav. But technically, I would have known that if the Mishnah would have just mentioned Shaul. Because gazel like Shaul is not lachem. But the Mishnah wants to tell you a chiddush in Hilchas Gzela. You might have thought in Hilchas Gzela there's a principle called Stam Gzela Yeush Bailamu, and the Gazlan acquired ownership through Yeush. and therefore it's not a psul of lachem. Kamashma the Mishnah says that we don't assume yeirush, and if we don't assume yeirush, the gazan has no ownership, and it's possibly din lachem. How much more so shol? So it's fascinating to me that the chiddush here of our Mishnah really belongs to a different Mishnah. It's halach and hilchus kaseh. So I'm also going to stop here. So Steve, I didn't get back to your question. That's going to be the next line in the Gemara here. Can I buy stolen goods and use it for a lulav? And the Gemara is going to have a case of called avankari, where the non-Jews are selling different minim of the dal minim. And the question is, can you purchase them? Would there be a problem of guzzle if you purchase stolen goods? Okay, then? Anyone who's interested, we're going to learn. This is non-formal. We're going to learn a little bit of Mishnah Berurah now after we take a 5-minute break.
Robert?
Yes?
We're talking about the birds and stealing. I read in a Musar Sefer, I don't know if it's proven zoologically, but the ants, if they detect that another ant has eaten some food or started food, they sense it and they won't touch it.
Really?
We learned about it. Even an ant won't perform gazette, but that's the way they were created, apparently.
Right.
It's like, well, oh, so
the oaf didn't have that creation, you know? Apparently. And now, philosophically, you can always ask, why did God create the oaf in such a way that it would be guilty of gezel, you know? And then we can't be makru the olas haof completely on the spec. That's an interesting
thing. The owners have to be careful that it only...
Maybe the reason why God created this is to teach us how much God detests gazelle.
This is a domestic animal.
Yeah, that's what Menachem was pointing at. You know, I don't know exactly if you have to domesticate an oaf. There are many different oafs that can be brought on the Mizbeach. It's for example, a turtle dove. The Torim Ebene Yonah. You know, you could domesticate it, but I would think that, as far as I know, if tell me if I'm wrong, you can bring any OSO from any Torah, but you don't have to domesticate it.
The carrot, you have a behemoth that's wild, that's just walking around, it eats what's in front of it.
Yeah, that I don't understand. That I couldn't figure out why the major singles out the oaf.
Maybe because even when they...
I'll tell you why. You're right. Because the animals are domesticated. They don't steal. The bialim have to be very careful that they don't steal. In the case of an oaf flies around. You know, we don't expect the bialim to incarcerate the oaf in such a way that it won't steal. So the oaf has a tendency of flying all over and bringing back, like if you remember the Yonah that Noah sent out, right, from the Tevah. You know, went out and found an Ali Zayas. Now, I don't know if there were olives on the thing or not, but if there were, I'm sure it was eating up the olives. So that Yonah could not be brought... it can be brought on the Mizbeach, but not with its Zephyr, not with the Yisrael.